Good evening and welcome to this week's edition of Editing Aloud. With me today, I have senior and most prominent business journalist in the country, as well as Ray Hartley. We have to single him out as our political honcho here. And Ray, I want to start with you. In coalition politics, that's the question about South Africa. We're heading into that in that direction. In the past, local government elections. Now we're kind of seeing the unfolding of the problems when it comes to coalitions, especially when there's no marriage at all of ideas, right? What's your take on what's happening in Pretoria and Nelson Mandela Bay with Mr. Trollope?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's 2 years is a long time in politics is the line that I used in my Financial Mail piece.
Yeah.
But, you know, then there was Jacob Zuma. Jacob Zuma united everybody else.
Yeah.
So even the DA and the EFF, which you think about it now, and usually coalition partnership, they got together. Metros. And along with some other smaller parties in Nelson Mandela Bay, but and formed these coalition governments. And now 2 years have passed. There's Cyril Ramaphosa. He's made a lot of overtures towards the EFF. He's invited Julius to come back into the fold, and he's swallowed up land.
Yes, the whole debate
policy. And now it's a different ball game. And so see on their own. But with the other parties are wanting to or may have thrown Athol Trollope out of the mayorship, the DA. They want to because there might be a court case.
Yeah.
And they could do the same tomorrow in China, where they have a majority, a slim majority if they get together. And if they wanted to, they could do the same in Joburg, except for the fact that Herman Mashaba has
somehow...
He's
got
been
something
very, very politically savvy, as it turns out. And he's consulted with the EFF on everything that he's done and brought them in on the decision-making. And they're quite happy with him.
So given our structural problems, structural faults in the country, is coalition politics a way to of us dealing with all the fundamental problems with the SA economy? We discuss it every week in, week out.
You know, Ron, there's somebody who said dumb politicians themselves are not the problem, but the problem are the people that keep voting politicians.
Okay.
And that is exactly what you are dealing with here.
Yes. Well,
you have, in Port Elizabeth, a hard-working mayor with a hard-working party that has got 2.2 billion rand in the bank for the municipality today, got the credit ratings for that municipality to be the highest in the public sector, AAA, just for the accident of his birth, Philip, what's his name, Trollope, a white man, something he could never do a thing about. He's out purely because the EFF has got absolutely no idea, completely bankrupt. They want to do. 2 years ago, Trollope was good enough and great
because
mayor.
Because Zuma was there, right? There was an anti-Zuma vote. Yeah?
Solim Simang was a great black in the DA that they could really...
Yes.
And Herman Mashaba, they didn't want...
But as 2 years is a long time. 2 years is a long time.
2 years is a long time.
Yeah?
Now, I repeat again, it's the dumb people that keep voting for dumb politicians that are the problem. There's absolutely... No clue, no vision,
this is
no
unfair,
idea.
This is unfair, but the politicians are, this is a political
Well, politics is not fair. If you say this is unfair,
so you can't call the people who vote for them. They voted 2 years ago, so now this is the politics unfolding without...
Politics unfolding, and guess what? The tragedy of the whole thing, other than the dumb politicians that are voted by dumb... The biggest tragedy is now the voters have just been reduced to spectators. Look! Look at the valves that have been made. That is the people of Port Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Andy Lungisa is a convicted criminal, as a start. What is the vision other than that we are cutting the throats of whiteness? What are they looking for?
Fair enough. Lukanyu, you've lived 10 years and you live in a coalition UK governed by Labour and who was the Independent Democrats. So you've seen, I mean, we're taking this to next year's elections,
the Tories
like
and the National Liberal Democrats.
How does a How does a coalition work? Like, I mean, and especially in this country's context, what we need to do to get this country.
I mean, as you said, like, I mean, we don't have a culture or history of coalitions. Yeah. I mean, we are like not Germany, for example. I mean, in Germany, the last two governments have actually been the Grand Coalition, two parties that are like so far apart in ideologically. But there is a much broader, bigger consensus in society about how they want to like organize a society. So even though this party is completely like on an opposite scale, but they've got like a consensus, societal consensus that's been built since the last war, like 70 years ago. I mean, Britain tried it for 5 years with the Liberal Dems and the Tories. But what they did there, I mean, they had a legal binding. So that's sort of like it would last 5 years. But then the smaller party there, the Liberal Dems, were told it when the next election came. So they went from being, I don't know, whatever many seats they had to basically having like 6 or 7.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's going to be happening there either. That's also because they don't have like a culture of coalitions because that is very confrontational, first past the post. And they tried it. I don't think there's going to be anybody in a rush soon.
Yeah.
So I think maybe these things do take time. Maybe let's not be too harsh. Maybe like these issues on PE and Swane and Joburg. Maybe let's look at them as maybe like, what did you call them? Well, I'm trying to look at the right word, but pains or whatever you call it. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, to think we're just going to like flip a coin and these things are going to work when we don't have a culture of doing them, it's a bit unrealistic, I think.
So like, Jana, I mean, we talk to ratings agencies and investors and so on. They all talk about policy certainty being policy uncertainty being the real reason why South Africa is where it is. So, is it a case where we have to back one horse in South African politics for the time being, and hopefully it's a good horse, whatever? What's your take on, I mean, going into next year and where we're all looking at the possibility of some coalition?
Yeah, I think that's the frustrating thing to watch, right? Is, you know, especially people, I don't particularly care a lot about politics.
Yeah.
So to watch this going on, and as Kanati said, you look at Nelson Mandela Bay, there's this massive cleanup going on. Now all of this gets parked again, just for the for the politicians to fight it over. And really, we just want people to get on with governing and getting things back on track. I mean, in terms of next year, I think the DA has, you know, I think the ANC will probably do better than we think. I think the DA will probably, you know, they've been very good at shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah.
So I don't think on a national level we get to a point where we actually see coalitions to the same extent. You know, maybe by 2023 the story looks different, but I think for next year, we're going to have an ANC in power, and hopefully with actually enough power to make difficult policy decisions and to start giving us that stability.
Hey, what do you see in your crystal ball?
Well, I mean, I think in that sense it'll be very interesting to see what happens next year.
Yeah,
because I think that the swing vote that has moved out of the ANC and in towards elsewhere is in the middle classes, and I'm not sure that cozying up to the EFF is the right way to get that swing vote to swing back again.
Yeah.
It could, in fact, alienate some of those. You know, it could drive them to the DA with all its faults and its internal...
Or stay away, as they've been doing for the past...
You know, it could be voting Julius Malema into power next to or with Cyril Ramaphosa might just, you know, play in the DA's favour. For the election,
the two of you, like, what are your views? What's is it?
I mean, it seems like it was not long ago people were saying, you know, Ramaphosa, Ramaphosa, ANC is going to get 2/3 majority again, and now we're talking coalitions. I wonder. I'm actually quite curious from people who know more about politics than I do. If anything has actually changed.
Yeah, I think the last wasn't the last ratings we saw was ANC still above 60%. But yeah, it will be interesting to see how.
What's your take? How do you see it unfolding next year?
Look, the DA has really given it all away. Whatever they until Jacob Zuma vacated the Gupta compound, they were doing well, and then they turned on themselves. So the ANC is really going to increase its majority. What will be most interesting is how the EFF will have done. Think about it. What do they stand for? The EFF does not start there. They do not want the land. They just the politics around it. They want to polarize society about around the land issue. They're not interested in the land. I've pointed at three inconsistencies already. I can go to town and for the next half hour tell you exactly everything they have been flip-flopped.
Yeah.
They stand for absolutely nothing but themselves. Now, I'd love to see how they will with the municipalities,
yeah.
How they assess them for 2019, unless, of course, the grand plan is to then fold into the ANC.
ANC at some point. Ray, UK visit, we have the British the UK is a different country now, being out of the EU, a much more desperate country. What's your take on the visit to with Ramaphosa? What's the feeling around their promises, and how desperate is UK to establish?
I think desperate enough to actually say, you know, this is what we're doing. We're going down to meet these three major African countries, yeah. Nigeria, Kenya, South Africa, in order to try and build a post-Brexit trade.
Yeah.
Arrangement, and I think that's fantastic for us, and I hope that we are taking advantage of this desperation to actually drive a good bargain with the UK, which could be a substantial trading partner.
Yeah.
Post Brexit, there's no reason why that should change. So a very good opportunity here for South Africa, I think, right now.
Lukanya, on the politics of the UK.
I think, obviously, this is going to take a while. We still don't know how Brexit is going to work itself out. And, the UK is still part of the EU, and it's still bound by EU, and it still cannot negotiate its own trade deals. And we don't even know what kind of transition that will come with the EU. It might just be actually they stay in the EU. They only leave the EU all in name. So in the end of the day, it might have but there's no downside for us because we still have a trade deal with the UK now due to its membership of the EU. So, there's no downside from us, except, of course, if there is, like, a chaotic thing and suddenly, like, our trade deal with them, like, becomes invalid because they're no longer part of the EU and we don't have enough time to replace it. Because if you think they're going to have to, like, negotiate, like, 60 deals if there was a crash.
Yeah.
So I doubt South Africa is going to be the first one on the top of the list. So there are dangers in that level. I mean, obviously, our hope is that what we should hope they actually manage their own Brexit process competently. So there actually isn't out for us. And then longer term, there might be opportunities. And there should be, because it's a long-standing relationship we've had with the Britons.
Yeah.
You know, trade deals don't get negotiated in a day.
Yeah.
I think with the existing EU trade agreement, that took about 10 years to finalize. And I don't think we'll ultimately see a very different deal with the UK on its own. And South Africa was a very tough negotiator on that EU deal.
Yeah.
So I expect they'll try and maneuver, maybe gain a little bit more ground, but ultimately to what the current agreement is like.
It'd be interesting, as I said, if let's just assume they have fallen out and they are doing 60, 70 trade deals, they're going to be in such a rush to do these trade deals, so we can basically demand whatever we want. they won't.
Welcome back as we continue this week's discussions. Big story this week. Marcus Schuster is going to come before Parliament next week. Well, finally, after 8-9 months, been waiting for this to happen. Jana, what do you expect next week from this? I understand there's going to be limits to what MPs can ask the big fish, but what do you think of next week's development?
I think the most exciting thing is probably going to see him in the flesh. Yeah. I doubt he's going to tell us anything interesting. I mean, you see Heather Son and some of the other Steinhoff people in Parliament today. And, you know, the investigations are not finalised. There are a whole lot of legal cases pending. So I doubt we're really going to get to the bottom of what's happened until at least December, when we're hoping to see that forensic investigative report. So I think Marcus will have a lot of no comments when he's actually in Parliament, but I think it's good that he's finally going to be there and
What can he give us?
He said I think the agreement is that he will he can't. There's a whole lot of things obviously he can't talk about because he has these legal cases pending, and he Steinhoff, because he's no longer with Steinhoff, you know, he left in December. So I think there's a lot that's happened since then, and he can't comment on the existing situation and the investigation. So frankly, I don't see what he can actually tell us. I don't think there's going to be a lot of answers coming from him.
Yeah, Ray, do you see a lot of stalling there happening in Parliament where just like no comments?
I think the deal is that he won't answer any difficult questions. Which is a little bit disappointing. You know, Parliament should actually be playing a much more aggressive role. And to have only now got around to hauling him before the committee. They could have done this way before all these cases happened. They could have reacted to the collapse of Steinhoff with a little more urgency. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, people's money got lost in pension funds and voters and so on. I mean, you know, now it's become mired in a whole bunch of court cases. It's become complicated. And Parliament sort of added itself on to that at the end, which seems a little bit disappointing.
What are you expecting, guys, next week?
I'm expecting Marcus Huster to just go there and sit back and say, can't talk about that, you know. Except, really, what is the whole purpose of this parliamentary hearing? There was a crime committed by, or maybe by or not by Marcus Huster at Steinhoff, which defrauded a whole lot of things and cost people 200 billion rand. Where are the law enforcement agencies? Whatever Parliament will do will only end up in a recommendation. They'll compile a fat report that will only have recommendations. It will be resolutions by Parliament.
But here's
what is necessary here.
But here's the genius of Marcus and Steinhoff. All this, like, listing, where's it Frankfurt listed, right?
Yeah.
Domiciled in
the Netherlands,
and then here. So all these different, there's three legal cases, which almost gives them protection, almost he has his opportunity.
Right. The whole thing here, there's an accounting fraud.
Yeah. And who's ultimate bears responsibility
now
for prosecuting?
The Germans have been investigating this for 4 years. They still are not anywhere near charging anybody.
The Dutch will do the same,
what
right?
The Dutch are doing.
And then there's us.
The South Africans, of course, are doing nothing. And Parliament tries to be seen to be doing something, yet it is doing exactly nothing. A year ago, we had a similar commission on Eskom. What has happened since? We're having two commissions here, one in our building. Again, they will all come to the same conclusion, recommendations. Yet, nobody is in doubt whatsoever that a lot of crimes, including treason, in the case of the state, has been committed. Where are the law enforcement agencies? Marcus Huster will go there and say, I can't talk about that, I'm not going to incriminate myself. Yet, there is no legal case anywhere. So if we had parliamentarians that were worth the title, they would stand up and say, excuse me, there is no legal case anywhere. I'm asking you a question. What did you do on that day and before? The day you were chief executive of Steinhoff and before you resigned, what happened? What were you apologizing for in those text messages? Why did you resign?
How long
he cannot say there's anything sub judice. There's no case anywhere. Now, that's another story again. Why is there no case?
But there is the Christo Visser suing him.
And that's a civil matter.
Yeah. Are you talking about criminal case?
It's a criminal case.
That's a civil matter. Christo Visser looking for his 59 billion rand. Actually, Christo Visser should be on the dock. Together with Marcus Huster, answering to a charge.
So they were trying to find a
criminal charge. There's
for
a
what?
Fraud. He signed off
on those
all those accounts as chairman of the company. The auditors, the board of directors, the best board we ever had in anybody ever had in this country, sat there. Very clever people. They saw nothing. They should be on the dock with him, being charged with fraud. Parliament is only going to provide a resolution about where regulations failed. What is the whole point
of this case?
He might as well sit home and tell them, I'm not coming. And easy.
Yeah? But at least, you know.
But you won't use that word, will
you? But at least there's a, like, there's a semblance of, well, of accountability here. This is the first time. I mean, as you say, December this thing unfolded, and now it's almost a year in, and we'll have the opportunity to sit. To have him sitting in the form.
What can we get out of this? Yeah, absolutely, I mean, nothing.
There is another case as well, which, you know, which is worth raising, which was, there were very good hearings in Parliament on the SABC.
Yes, they were excellent, yeah.
You know, they were riveting.
And what did they give us?
And Makosi Khoza was brilliant as an ANC MP. She was prepared. But nobody
what is the
has.
Outcome?
There's been no criminal investigation.
The outcome
of that brilliant SABC
changed the entire board.
The SABC
gone. There's entire new management. That was the end of who was
it? Did finish the Claudie Motsoeneng.
Yeah, it did finish Claudie. There was a full stop on Claudie.
I beg to differ. Claudie was already on his knees. Faith Mutambi was already on her knees. Jacob Zuma was on his knees. They had lost power effectively.
Not yet. He was still president then. Right?
Yes, he was still president, but the whole ANC had revolted against him. The whole ANC at Luthuli House and the caucus, then they were able to drag the matter to Parliament. Now, what outcome did we get out of that process? Do you even know what the recommendations were?
It just marked an end of a chapter.
Do you know what
it did mark an end of a Claudie Motsoeneng chapter?
Yes.
Whatever the case may be.
Claudie was dragged to Parliament only because Jacob Zuma could no longer prevent him being dragged there.
Yes.
What did we get out of that expensive hearing?
So what we say, okay, moving on, we have the Zondo Commission here, we have the SARS Commission, all these commissions and all these. Are they just like frills on the sidelines? We need
to not be negative about the commission.
Yes.
The fact that the criminal justice system fails to bring charges and to take action against these things when they're exposed is a separate matter.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a very good thing that the voters of South Africa
get
to stare into the abyss and see what happened with state capture, what happened at the SABC. What happened at Steinhoff, it empowers people to actually have this information. It might influence the way they vote, for example, or, you know, take action in their lives or make investment decisions.
Mm.
So I think they're very good things, and it's very healthy to ventilate this stuff in detail. The fact that it doesn't, you know, the criminal justice system is incapable, even when the facts are shoved before it in great volume, of doing anything about it is a scandal.
Before we get sick on that skeptical view, I want to add my own optimistic view. You know, as somebody who's been out of the country for 10 years, it's been a great education. And like, so if anything else, it's getting me up to speed since you were living.
Welcome, sir. We should send the bill to the editor's office.
So it has. We basically achieved something.
We should.
I guess what it does as well, as you say, is part of it. Now we know we have to fix our hawks, our NPA, and so on. This is central. We have to fix this part of this institution within the country.
This band here
says
I'm in the hearings upstairs.
Yes.
So without indeed impugning the personal integrity of the Honourable Judge Zondo and indeed Judge Nugent in Pretoria on the SARS matter, the reality of the matter is that we will get nothing.
However,
other
wait.
Recommendations.
Wait, Sikunati. We disagree with this. At least we have historical. Some as it's been aired out. If there was no commission right now, if there was no commissions happening in this country right now, if Marcus Justa wasn't being brought forward Parliament, what would we all be in the dark? Just like sitting on conspiracy.
We are very much in the light now about what's happening.
Yeah, at least. Now we know the next step is Yana, NPA.
Just like we did have those long Truth and Reconciliation Commission hearings, and people were identified having committed crimes, and no one was ever brought to book. Just like for the past 25 years, and Ray is very optimistic, so am I. Indeed, for the past 24, 25 years, we've been reading and knowing about corruption.
Are you saying TRC was useless for this country's steps beyond 94? Are you saying TRC was not?
That's a different topic that needs a whole hour.
You've raised it. You've put it on the table here.
Yes,
I'm about to say, even though
yes.
So are you saying TRC was not worth its...
That's the answer, yes.
Okay. That is a topic for another day. We have to move into Lucanio, resilient, and what's been going on around resilience. I mean, Business Day has been constantly on this. Katie, Yana and Lucanio, you guys are running the Business Day. What's going on resilient, and what's going on within that property company?
I mean, it's been an interesting one as well. Like, it happened before my time, so I've also been catching up. But I think the most interesting development really here is the fact that suddenly you have all these fund managers. I mean, these are all big names, you know, from the PIC to Investec to, because normally these kind of things get done behind closed doors. And I mean, the fact that for a change, I mean, you got Old Mutual today. It seems like, you know, the big names there are actually developing some kind of moral spine. And I think that's quite a positive one. And also with these companies, I mean, this company is more than just a name. Like, you know, the property is one of those things that everybody sort of seems to think that they should be invested in. So I can imagine most people who are reading this or who are watching us have some kind of like stake in these companies, because property has always been seen as a sure bet, maybe other than gold or something, like, you know, traditionally in this country. So I think it's an important story, not just as a corporate story that's out there, but for people out there at home who are actually who are invested.
Property.
No, I think it also comes back to the point you made earlier about certainty. You know, the fact that these investigations into insider trading and share price manipulation and things, you know, it's also been going on for months, and you're getting no updates from the JSE. There's nothing coming out of the Financial Services Conduct Authority. Yeah. Thank you. And you know, it's been 7-8 months, and this issue has weighed actually on the entire property sector, which is one of the big underperformers this year. You know, these things have an impact beyond just the specific companies that are, and really we need to jack up those skills in terms of forensic and complex financial investigations, not only in the AUCS and the NPA, but also in some of the other regulatory bodies.
Yeah. And I think, so just to add to what Yana said, I mean, the last 10 years, obviously, the last few years, it's all been about state capture, wrongdoing by government. And I think, like, maybe people in business have gotten away with it a little bit, because we haven't really...
More than a
little bit, yes, exactly.
Exactly, because these fund managers, these guys that are now suddenly finding a spine to stand up and say, except again, they are still begging. If they knew what rights they have as shareholders, only 10% of shareholders of that company can write and force a board meeting and propose resolutions. Instead of them begging the resilient and those guys to please play open cards with us, please tell us what happened. They should be enforcing their rights, insist on a shareholders meeting, and 10% of shareholders can just put agenda, proposed resolutions, and the board will call the meeting. And the resolution should be, we will institute a forensic investigations. Here are the terms of reference. We as shareholders demand that. They are not doing that.
Thanks for that, Signor. So maybe that's a story of just how small a city Johannesburg really is. And thank you for joining us this evening. We'll see you next week.